Choke points.
Let's go.
I could see this coming from a mile away. Let me guess. They're going to start canceling the congestion projects and continue to prioritize the fish passage projects.
That is correct. At least that's the plan right now. Now, these projects are not being canceled, Dave. They're on the pause list. Mm-hmm. P-A-U-S-E, not P-A-W-S. We're not talking cats and dogs here. We're talking slowing down projects. And so here's how this all worked out. Governor Inslee told the Department of Transportation to put the bidding process on hold for some of these projects that did not meet his directive to focus on fish passage projects in this budget that he's put together. So then the Washington Department of Transportation head, Roger Millar, came up with a list of 9 transportation projects that did not meet that criteria. And they include some biggies. The Gateway Project, which we have talked about for years, which would finish 167 from Puyallup to I-5 and 509 into the Port of Tacoma, and the I-5 projects in Marysville that would add that new on and off ramp at 529, something that creates a daily choke point up there. Those are huge projects that people have fought to have funded for years. And in fact, they were also projects that were funded under the 2015 Connecting Washington Transportation Plan. Fife Mayor Kim Roscoe testified before the House Transportation Committee last week, asking them to reconsider.
It is ironic, though, and incredibly counterproductive that a project so pivotal to economic recovery, so instrumental to completing a direct connection into a world-class container cargo port, and one that will help bring so many thousands of new jobs into our state, would have the pause button hit on it.
Pushing the pause button doesn't cancel the projects, as I said, but it does stop the bidding process from beginning. So because of the uncertain financial picture and the budgets being hammered out in Olympia, the rationale here is to not commit dollars right now that you might not have when the budgets are finalized. So that's kind of what they're doing. And those two projects, the Gateway Project and the 529 projects on I-5 up in Marysville, were set to go to bidding like right now. And so they kind of hit during the legislature. Tacoma City Council member Christina Walker also on the Gateway Project.
Despite our current financial challenges, the city of Tacoma and other local governments are making our payments as agreed upon, and we are concerned that the delay will only increase the construction costs.
What she's talking about there is that the locals have put together packages of monies, and money from the federal government have been assigned to these projects that they're concerned will disappear if the state doesn't move forward. For the Gateway Project, that's about $200 million that could be at risk of local money that's being raised and federal money. So I pose this question to WashDOT's Chris Reitman. Why are we doing this? What's the rationale? And she said, quote, at this point, there's no risk to federal or local funding. Your question, that's the question I asked, is why governor's office and the legislature need to discuss how to address our transportation budget challenges longer term to include funding for fish passage and preservation. Former state senator and current Pierce County council member Hans Zeiger helped move the Gateway Project up several years, says this pause is going back on what people were promised.
So many people are expecting that this is going to happen, and I think to put it on pause is just the wrong choice during this time.
There was similar testimony for folks up in Snohomish County. So the governor's two-year budget contains $726 million for fish passage work. It's nearly triple what's in the current budget. No one disputes that keeping up with the fish passage work is necessary, considering the federal court order mandating it. In fact, the House Democrats have proposed putting $3.5 billion toward the effort over the next 16 years. I asked the governor's office to explain why these key projects were included on the pause list, and it sounds like Governor Inslee might be willing to work to keep these projects on schedule. Quote, we have heard concerns from legislators regarding our plan to pause advertising a number of transportation projects. We're reviewing this short-term pause and will be working closely with the transportation leaders in the House and Senate to find an alternative approach. That's the statement I received from the governor's transportation policy advisor, Debbie Driver. A couple other things that are on this list, some roundabouts on Highway 9 in Lake Stevens, improvements on 405 at 132nd, that reversible HOV lane that we've been talking about between I-5 and 520, and improving 520 at 148th and a project down in Vancouver. So there's some big things on this list that are being paused right now.
Okay, so anticipating the complaints, is this fish versus the commuter?
Well, I mean, it depends on your point of view. We are the state is under a court order to fix the fish passage, right? To spend a certain amount to do.
Yes, that's nice. That all came though before the whole pandemic thing. Right?
That is correct. Okay. But the governor's plan during this coming out of the pandemic is to spend 3 times more on Fish Passage than on projects that were already funded. So if you want to, could it be fish versus congestion? Maybe, but we're under a court order to fix the fish. Do we need to do three times the amount of money that we've been doing when they've been fixing these culverts and doing it quite smartly for the last couple of years? That's up to your, that's up to the opinion. But these projects are big projects, and there's a concern that pressing pause may delay them and make them cost more.
Yeah, but I mean, is it fair to say that you're that they're tone deaf to the economic problems? By I mean, we're all in favor of the fish, but I know what my email queue looks like.
Yeah,
and people will come away from this saying, "Well, there they go again," right?
Especially when the House Democrats have already talked about a 33-cent increase in the gas tax right now coming out of this, and then now stripping away potential projects. So, yeah, I mean, it does seem somewhat tone deaf out of Olympia. It's not the first time we've ever said that, but certainly now it doesn't. It just seems like the priorities are a little backwards.
Chris Sullivan. This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien and Chris Sullivan. While we struggled to get our vaccination program off the ground here in the U.S., in Israel, it's already being reported that infections have dropped sharply after one shot of the vaccine, and they're getting it out the door and into people's arms apparently more quickly than any other nation in the world. So let's talk with Michael Friedson from the Media Line in Jerusalem. Are these reports accurate? Is it going that well?
Yeah, it's going real well, Dave. Israel has digitized for a while. In the early 90s, they started the process, and every Israeli gets to join one of four health organizations of their choice. And when you divide a population, it's only 9 million people amongst four organizations, all of which are very heavily computerized and digitized. All your data is right sitting on a plate for the taking. And that was part of what allowed Israel to cut the deals to be the first to receive the Pfizer vaccine. It's receiving the Moderna now. They were able to cut deals with the companies to share data in terms of the effectiveness of the drug. Mm-hmm. And in return, they got the preference in getting the drug itself. So the latest numbers that are coming out, as you said, the number of those who have received two vaccines is growing daily. And amongst those, one of the HMOs just reported today that after 128,000 second injections, there were only 20 that developed any kind of symptoms, and they were kind of light. So it's very encouraging.
So have you gotten your shot already?
I got one. I'm scheduled to get on Thursday. I'm supposed to get my second one.
So what's involved? Do you have a priority system where certain people go first, or can you just walk into a corner drugstore and get your shot? How do you know when it's your turn?
Oh, a typical Mideast answer. The answer is yes. I'll give you an example. When I went for my first shot, I'm a bit older than my wife, and they were vaccinating a certain age on up, and I fell in that category. And they were vaccinating those with underlying ailments, and the list was beginning to build. My wife came with me, and when I received my ticket to get in to actually get the shot, she said to the gentleman handing out the tickets, you know, I'm scheduled 2 weeks from now, but I'm here with my husband. So they said, no problem, get it now. So she not only got it now, she got an earlier date for her second shot than I got. I've heard stories of young people that didn't qualify because they were too young going to the inoculation centers and kind of hanging out until the end of the day. And rather than waste the vaccine because they're recollected and disposed of, they were able to, even though they were nowhere near the actual list, they were able to get the shots.
Well, I mean, that's good. The idea is to get it to as many people as possible. So is it your feeling that then this whole thing's going to be over for you guys?
I sure would like to think that. The data that's just coming now is really pointing that way, because the other good piece of information is that the drug manufacturers are having very good success with the drugs attacking the mutant strains that have everybody so worried.
Yeah.
So if that's not going to be an issue further to what already is, it's pretty positive. The bulk of the new infections, that's the flip side of the coin. Despite Israel's excellent rollout and the fact they've gotten so many people inoculated so quickly, there's still a soaring infection rate. But the infection rate is really centralized in two communities. One, the ultra-Orthodox, as they call them, the Jewish, very religious, live by rabbinic dictate kind of society. Mm-hmm. There are runaway infections there. And also the Arab-Israeli society, which doesn't seem to trust these kind of things. So if you take away those two communities, the infection rate is very, very low.
Huh. And what about school?
Schools are still closed. That's a hotbed of infection, but there's a lot of debate over that. The schools have a ripple effect. The parents have to stay home with the kids, so that messes up the workplace even further than it is. But the government argues that since we're in a complete lockdown until the end of the month, you really can't factor that in, and we'll have to decide what's going to be when the day comes that we can get out of the total lockdown. I know our grandson is really tired of just being home taking care of his parents.
Yeah.
And his parents would kind of almost like to go back to work.
Michael Friedson from the Media Line in Jerusalem. Michael, thanks very much.
Always a pleasure, Dave.
An independent investigation is now underway into the conduct of the Tacoma police officer who drove through a crowd in Tacoma on Saturday. But that investigation is being handled by a neighboring police agency, and the effort to change that policy is going to be front and center in the state legislature this morning. Here's Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott.
In the wake of George Floyd's killing by Minneapolis police and the similar in-custody death of Manny Ellis in Tacoma, Governor Inslee creating a task force of experts and family members of those killed by police to focus on recommending changes to the way police use of deadly force investigations are handled. Katrina Johnson, whose cousin Charlena Lyles was killed by Seattle police, was on the task force and told me at the time the number one priority was,
as a completely independent entity investigating the police use of deadly force, and it is out of the hands of law enforcement agencies.
Those recommendations have now been turned into request legislation from the governor in House Bill 1267, with Kent Democrat and Black Caucus member Deborah Enteman as the lead sponsor.
If this legislation is to pass as written, I believe we'll have real accountability measures. We will stand up independent investigative units in different regions so that when there is an officer-involved shooting, there will be someone to immediately start the investigation and take it over from the local police department.
That would allow for truly independent investigations.
I think what has been shown to have happened is that there are times when police departments seem to be more concerned about protecting the officer instead of finding out what really happened in the incident.
For instance,
if I look at what happened in the case of Breonna Taylor, it is my understanding that legally no one shot her, but we know that she is dead. And so that just doesn't make any logical sense. And so here we have cases where the police are investigating the incident where it seems to be that at the same time they are trying to investigate their fellow police officer. There's a conflict. We believe that there's a conflict of interest here. So in the independent investigations bill, we are trying to remove that conflict of interest.
This bill gets its first committee hearing this morning at 8 a.m. in the House Public Safety Committee. The independent investigations bill now taking on an even higher profile as not only the state but the world's eyes focus on the Tacoma officer who drove through a crowd of people over the weekend and the independent investigation into that incident, currently being handled by the neighboring Pierce County Force Investigation Team. Enteman had not seen the viral video of the officer driving through the crowd yet when we spoke Sunday morning.
When a police officer gets in a car and is concerned about his own safety to the point where he might run over pedestrians. Again, I did not see the video, and I'm not a police officer, and I wasn't there. But it seems to me we should have systems in place where the police officer could call for backup, where there's just more that goes on than a police officer fearing for his or her life and running people over. There needs to be more accountability on all sides.
Meantime, in Tacoma, city leaders holding special meetings last night to start getting some of their own answers.
Along with so many others, I was shocked and horrified to see video of a police vehicle driving over a person.
A tragedy happened. It happened in large part because as a society, we haven't figured out better strategies to police our communities.
It just really can't be underscored that people are feeling extremely traumatized by every event that keeps coming. And it feels like a fire hose that will not turn off.
City Council grilling the interim police chief about the incident, who explained,
"We have to wait for a full and complete investigation."
He and many on the City Council also focusing on the street racing or drifting going on that led cops to get 911 calls and respond to the scene in the first place. But Councilmember Keith Blocker concerned about the conversation's heavy focus on the street racing aspect.
What was most important is how we deploy officers in a way to preserve life. That's what this conversation should be grounded in. That's what should be most important. And we spent, in large part, most of this dialogue talking about street racing.
Members of Tacoma's Civilian-Run Community Police Advisory Committee, or CPAC, met right after the council last night for their own sit-down with the chief and were clearly frustrated.
This was a very upsetting video to watch.
This is traumatic.
I'm just waiting to see what the investigation is going to say.
Tacoma Mayor Victoria Woodard's heartbroken by what happened and concerned about what it means for the city's ongoing efforts to build up community trust with police.
Opposite of doing nothing will paralyze all of us. And if we get paralyzed and don't move, this stuff will continue to happen.
And that goes beyond just independent investigations, but real change across the board when it comes to policing to ensure community trust, as we see with so many different bills in Olympia being proposed right now.
So, Hannah, does this mean that we no longer call the police to do things to address street racing and let it happen, or what?
No, I don't think that's the conversation that's going on at all. And I think that the point you're hearing there from many members was that this doesn't need to be a conversation about street racing. It could have been a response to anything, a protest, any other reason that people are gathered in the street for some reason. Mm-hmm. And it's the response of the officers that, you know, we need to get to a point where at no time ever does an officer feel that they have to fear for their life behind the wheel of their vehicle because they're being swarmed by a crowd.
Well, that's the question. Why was the crowd swarming them?
You know, we don't know. That's something that the police chief said. They're looking. They didn't make any arrests that evening. They are looking at. I'm sorry. They did make two from community organizers who were there later from a protest, but they are looking at the people who were involved in the street racing or the drifting or whatever that was going on, and they're going to have that be part of their own separate investigation. But they haven't come out with anything because of that yet. And you're not going to get a lot of answers. This is all because, and I want to make sure everybody knows this, anybody who voted for I-940, you voted for something that requires very specific things when it comes to investigations of police use of deadly force, which is what this is. And because of that, there are certain steps that are, they take time. And that's what the interim police chief was trying to explain to the city council last night. There's nothing I can do. It's over here with this Pierce County team, and they have to follow these procedures. As they do, we'll get, you know, weekly updates, I believe, is what will start to happen. Mm-hmm. But they'll have to wait until they finished everything. That's why there's a delay.
Kyrie's Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
Your Daily Dose of Kindness, sponsored by Mike Novak and ListWithNovak.com. A pizza delivery man got a much bigger piece of the pie than he was expecting from a customer in Tipton, Indiana. CBS's Steve Hartman is on the road with a community that came together to give him the tip of a lifetime.
Robert Peters has been delivering pizzas 31 years. Pizza Hut says he's one of their longest tenured delivery people, which Robert admits isn't something most folks aspire to.
There are people in my family that were, you know, say, maybe you should consider something a little bit more financially stable, but it is my purpose in life, trying to make people happy. You know, when you're delivering to somebody, you may be the only face they even see all day.
It's good to see you again.
Thank you.
And it's that attitude.
Hey, how you doing?
Combined with an almost obsessive devotion to customer service.
I always appreciate you, man.
That has earned Robert a real reputation in this town.
So thank you so much.
Tanner Langley is a regular. He says, God forbid you pay for a pizza and Robert can't make exact change.
He'll drive 3 or 4 miles down the road in a blizzard just to bring you, you know, 15 cents and change.
But you're tipping him anyway.
Yeah.
Why does 15 cents matter?
It's the moral of it. He didn't want to feel like you had to tip him because he didn't have the change.
After so many experiences like that, Tanner felt compelled to give Robert a tip commensurate with his job performance. So he reached out to the community and asked them to pitch in to buy Robert a new car. Robert's 93 Olds was an ancient. But in just 3 days, the good people of Tipton donated enough for a shiny red Chevy Malibu, plus insurance and gas money, $19,000 total.
Tanner, how do you explain this?
That's what I'm saying. That is the type of impact that he has on people.
And that really makes me feel really, really good inside.
Here are your keys.
This week, we got a new president. But Robert proves the most important job in America, in fact, the only job that you know can make the world a better place, is yours.
Thank you. You too. Thank you. See you later.
Steve Hartman, CBS News, on the road.
Might I add, too, that marrying a former pizza delivery driver locally has done wonders for traffic because delivery drivers know all the back roads. So
really,
just a little hot tip there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got it.
They still need me. You still need me.
That's true, Sully. You know all the back roads, too, and didn't have to deliver pizzas to know it.
That's true.
Now, from the G and Ursula Show, weekdays 9 to noon, here is G Scott. So you're a Tacoman. What's the street racing scene like down there, and who does it attract?
I live in Tacoma, and I've also lived in San Diego. When I lived in San Diego, I saw street racing an awful lot. Down here in Tacoma, I had never seen it before. I've never seen it personally. I can't tell you who it attracts, Dave, because honestly, Dave, that's really not my thing when it comes to street racing.
Yeah.
But when, of course, we were talking about what happened the other night at that intersection on 9th and Pacific. And that, I think, I want to be clear on this. I think doing donuts in the streets is absolutely not smart at all. I thought it was very bad that it was happening. I thought it was reckless. I think that someone could get hit, and I totally understand why the police were called. And the police were called, I'm quite sure, to stop that, because they were there to stop that from happening, because like I just said, it's dangerous. You don't want anybody to get hit or ran over. Ironically, the police were called and the police were there, and they ended up running over someone. So that's the unfortunate part of this whole entire deal. And everybody says, well, they were in front of the car. They were banging on the police car. It was 12 seconds. It was 12 seconds of them banging on the police car. And by the way, which I don't agree with as well. I mean, I think there needs to be more respect for police officers. But it's unfortunate that it happened.
Yeah. We don't know what happened yet exactly, no. But it's bad all around. Is there something that says, okay, these days if the police show up, it's okay to surround them? And
no, it's not. It is absolutely not okay to do that. And unfortunately, like I said, I talked about this on my show yesterday, and I'll talk about it again. You can be upset with what's going on with police agencies around the country and here locally, while at the same time respecting police officers that you see out and about. You could do both. I'm disappointed in what's happening. I'm disappointed in the fact that the Manny Ellis case is, quote, still under investigation, and we're going into the march. I don't like that as well. At the same time, if I see a local police officers out and about, I'm going to give them respect the same way I give any other human being respect.
When you watch that video, and it's, you know, widely seen on social media now, I had to watch it about 5 times to really get what was going on. What were your initial thoughts with how the officer handled that?
I thought that they're trained, right? They take an oath to serve and protect. And I thought that, and I've seen the different angles, and I thought it's unfortunate that that's happening. I can't believe that the result of police officers being called is for citizens to get ran over. I don't think anybody will agree that that was the result that they wanted to happen when the police were called in the first place. So my reaction was just like that. And the first thing I didn't go to, well, why were they doing donuts in the first place? I mean, Because whoever was doing donuts, it was not a good idea. But I don't, it doesn't matter what they were doing. No one deserves to get ran over by a police cruiser. The same way when Dylann Roof went to Burger King after he did what he had done, right? He didn't get ran over by anything. So the same way when it comes to what happened in the intersection, nobody should have gotten run over by a police cruiser.
Do you think, I think Hannah was talking about this. This is going to be investigated not by the Tacoma police, but by another police agency. Is that the way this should be handled?
Say that one more time.
This is being investigated by another police agency. So in other words, they're removing it from the Tacoma police, but it's still being investigated by police because the theory is they understand more about policing than ordinary citizens.
There's kind of a mistrust when it comes to that as well, right? Like the mistrust when it comes to that is kind of like the same thing that's happening with the Manny Ellis case. That's still under investigation since that happened in March of 2020. You kind of wonder, you kind of side eye, and you kind of hope for the best that the right things are being done with this investigation.
G. Scott joins Ursula this morning at 9 here on Cairo Radio. Thanks, G. And Tuesdays, we go live to the nation's capital and Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David Farenthold at the Washington Post. So, impeachment trial number 2 is underway. So off the top, do you see any chance at all of conviction here?
I do think there is a chance. I don't think it is an overwhelming chance, but I think it's better than the basically zero chance that there was for the first impeachment at the start of 2020.
And is there a sense among members of Congress that whether there's a conviction or not, that a message needs to be sent that this is just not acceptable behavior?
I think there is a sense among many of them that what Trump did was unacceptable. Whether that translates into a vote for a conviction or a vote to bar Trump from office, I don't know. A lot of Republicans have said, you know, that they think that the getting Trump out of office means that there really isn't a role for them anymore. Even though there seems to be precedent for impeaching a former president or a former official, they seem to believe like they shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Actually, what is your role now? Because, I mean, you made your name tracking Trump's finances. So are you off the Trump beat at this point?
No, there's actually a lot of interest in what Trump is doing now. His business is under a lot of strain, and I think people are interested in sort of seeing how that sorts out. I don't think this will be something I'm doing in a year, but at least for the next few weeks or months, the story of what becomes of the Trump Organization, I think, is a pretty fascinating one.
Let's wrap up some of the loose ends. I know one of the first things that you were trying to figure out was whether Trump was in violation of the Emoluments Clause because his hotels were obviously accepting payments from overseas individuals. What's happened to that?
Basically nothing. So there were a lot of legal cases filed, and then there was a lot of wrangling over just the question of who had the right to sue, who is standing to sue. Could a Maryland or the District of Columbia sue? Could competitors sue? Could a good government group sue? And we never got even the answer to that pretty basic question. So the case lingered before the Supreme Court long enough that yesterday they declared it to be moot because Trump is no longer president. So we really don't have any idea of what a quote-unquote emolument is and what presidents should be barred from doing or not doing. So we'll have to wait for the next president who operates a business that does business with foreign governments to find that out. So Joe Biden, as far as I know, is not doing that.
No. He seems to be in a whole different level of wealth from Trump. On what was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, fact-checking. CNN ran its first fact check on Joe Biden, and I was reading through it, and basically they could not find very much wrong with anything he said about things like the number of educators who have lost. I mean, basically it was a pretty boring topic, but he was talking about educators who've lost their jobs and how we have to help them. The Republican Party saying it was a false flag attack, things like that. What is the future of fact-checking if you have a president who actually looks up stuff?
Well, I think it will go back to the way it was under Obama. There will be fact-checks of the president when he gets something wrong, fact-checks of others in politics, but it won't be sort of an all-consuming, you know, dozens of lies per day business the way that it was under Trump. We've never had a president as thoroughly dishonest as Trump, so I don't think you'll see – you know, anybody breathlessly trying to keep up with Joe Biden during a rally, with a different lie in every sentence. But the business of holding people to account and figuring out whether they're lying to us still goes on. It just may not be quite as busy.
So are you going to have to lay off fact checkers?
No, we'll find other uses for them. If there's too many on the team, well, they'll find other jobs.
Okay. Joe Biden got to work right out of the gate. I lost count of all the executive orders. But there's also this concern that if he can't get cooperation from Congress, he will have to govern by executive orders. And the problem with that is, as the Trump people know, is that the next president can just reverse them all, which is what Biden is doing to Trump now. So I'm having a trouble getting a handle on whether Mitch McConnell is now a reformed person and believes in cooperation, or whether this is just going to be another 4 years of tit for tat.
I think, well, it's a little early to tell, but I do think that the Democrats who have a majority in the House and the Senate will succeed in getting some of their stuff through. They will make policy changes. I think the first thing probably will be the some sort of additional COVID stimulus package. It's going to be hard, but the fact that the Democrats have the majority and have the experience of working with McConnell under Obama, when basically McConnell used Obama's promises to unify the country against Obama by blocking him at every turn and stymieing many of the things that he promised. I mean, think about health care. How long did health care last because they wanted to get one Republican vote? I don't think that Biden, who had a front row seat to that, is going to make the same mistakes that Obama did. So I think they will get more out of the Senate, even with McConnell in the way.
Is there a concern over the price of this package? And will the Republicans rediscover their concern about deficits?
I'm sure they will. I mean, after the Trump years in which the deficit skyrocketed, I think you're already seeing some Republicans discover their rediscover their aversion to spending. But I do think that the Democrats, who have 50 seats in the Senate, will find a way around that. I think the most important vote in the next 2 years is probably going to be Joe Manchin of West Virginia, the most conservative Democrat. What he wants probably will, you know, because he's the 50th vote, which lets Kamala Harris break ties. I think whatever Manchin wants is going to be the most important factor, not what the Republicans want.
Yeah. Now, do you find it at all disconcerting? And I was surprised when this thought flashed across my mind. But, I mean, I haven't seen a Trump tweet for 2 weeks now. Do you find that at all worrisome that this voice has suddenly been silenced?
No, because he's not silenced. I mean, that's the crazy thing. He is complaining so much about the fact that his Twitter feed is lost, but he's the former president. He could call into Fox News. He could call into CNN. He could put out press releases. There's a million other ways to get his word out that are not quite as easy as just opening up Twitter on your couch and typing it out and getting it to the world in 20 seconds. But there's no way that a man who has that much notoriety and that many allied media outlets has been silenced. He could get his word out, but for some reason he's not doing it.
So this idea that he's been canceled, and I think Trump Nation figures that collectively they have been canceled. That's not true as far as you're concerned.
I mean, definitely not Trump Nation, because they have three or four TV news networks dedicated to catering to their questions and to regurgitating their views. The thing about Trump is, think about how Trump got well known as a political candidate in 2015 and 2016. It was partly through Twitter, but a lot of it was by calling in to shows like Morning Joe or Fox News.
Yeah.
And they would just open the line and let him say whatever he wanted. Maria Bartiromo on Fox would definitely let him do that if he wanted to. And for some reason, he's not doing it. But that line is still available to him, I think, on Fox and several other networks.
Okay, so it's fair to say that if he's silenced, it's because he either has nothing to say or just doesn't want to say it publicly.
It's definitely not because he has no outlets for his voice.
And for people like Josh Hawley and the other Republicans who kept on voting to decertify election results, even after the attack on the Capitol, what do you think awaits them?
Well, I think it's too early to say. I mean, I think some of them, you know, there's been a lot of political contributions cut off. I think there's been some, you know, some effort to investigate folks who might have, like, actually aided the insurrectionists in the House. We've seen people talk about expelling Hawley or Cruz from the Senate. I think it's way too early to know. A lot of these folks, you know, did the thing that Trump wanted, and Trump is still the most important figure in the Republican Party. So the consequence they care about is whether they're going to win again in 2 years or, you know, whenever they run again. And I think until we see Republican primaries in 2022 and we know what role Trump will play, it's really hard to say that they have been punished. They could find themselves just as powerful as they were before.
David Farenthold, live from The Washington Post. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.